Flashback Twin Cities. Tom Osman here for the next hour on KLBB Club 1220. We have an all-Tom show today, actually, because we have Tom Shue running the board.
Howdy do.
Got his orange KLBB shirt on. We got Tom Ishke to my right. He's gearing up, ready to talk about something.
I'm in a Batman costume, as long as we're talking about what we're wearing.
He's in the Phantom Collar costume.
Actually, Tom Shue was just dancing to that intro music, and I have never seen a 30-year-old dance to music like that before.
And you never want to again.
Well, welcome to my station.
There's something heartening about just seeing a young guy move to that music.
It's great disco music.
And the best part is he does it every single week, too. It's like the first time he's ever heard the song.
He's a very happy person.
Aren't we happy here?
He seems
Batman's
happier.
Never happy.
He seems like he might be peaking.
We have and by the way, it's the 26th of April, and we were just all talking about it. It's prom night, and you're still you're ready for prom night.
Me?
Yeah.
Well, why? Just because I come in an orange tuxedo, ready to go dancing? I have no idea what you mean.
If there's a young Stillwater woman who's single who would like to go with Tom to the prom, stop by 104 North Main.
That's Tom Shue, not Tom Osman.
Lowered expectations.
That's right. That's right. A few weeks ago, we did an event, which I've plugged shamelessly on the show, Newsapalooza, and I was fortunate to have my guest here, Tom Ishke, part of that show, and it was a very miserable cold day, but I talked to him at the show, and I said, you got to come over to KLEB and do Flashback Twin Cities, because you have this podcast coming up on the Tom Bernard Radio Network, and I wanted to give you a chance to talk about that, and also talk a little bit about how you got from listening to talk radio to being talk radio. Now you're in this digital world of mm-hmm. tomorrow. And you actually kind of pioneered this podcasting thing a few years ago.
Made an attempt 5 years ago to make a living doing it, but now looking back, I think it might have actually been just an attempt to bridge a one-year no-compete clause in my contract, disguised as a possible career. 5 years ago, when I got fired from KSTP, for no reason whatsoever...
Are we legally? No, we can't discuss that.
What?
Oh, never mind. Okay.
What? Go ahead and say it. What were you going to say? Illegally? Did you say?
I said, was there a? Are you legally bound not to speak of the terms of that separation?
Oh no, I don't think so. I don't remember. I think the only thing I signed at the end was that I wouldn't sue him. Cool. There was a deal like that. They said, Mishke, here's a last paycheck for you. You want it? And they were holding it there, and I made a couple of grabs, and they pulled it back. They said, sign there. And what's that say? That says you won't sue us. I said, well, why the hell would I sue you? So I signed, you know. I said, you guys should have fired me 100 different times. I'm never going to sue you. Let me sign 5 times. Now, give me that money. And they gave me the money. That was great. And,
was it Stanley Hubbard
I
himself?
I spent it all.
Was it?
No. actually, interestingly, the guys sitting in that room sending me away would both leave KSTP in the coming years. Todd Fisher would be let go as GM. And I remember calling him after he was let go. And I said, Todd, I got some money for you. Stop by. You just got a sign right here. And then, tragically, Steve Conrad in that horrible motorcycle accident on 94 and Western. I still drive past I-94 and Western. And think of Steve every time on that motorcycle. Guy in front driving an SUV with a mattress on the roof. Mattress comes off. Costs Steve his part of his brain and his livelihood. And the guy was never seen nor heard from again. They never found him.
No, that's and Steve Conner, he was a former program director.
He was the guy who hired me back in 92. We were all the same age. Ginny Hubbard was 29. I was 29. Steve was 29. We were kids. And we danced to music like that theme song. We were always just dancing to music like that. And we got our start together, really. I mean, Ginny was growing AM 1500 then and working with Yates and Barbara Carlson and Turi Ryder and Vogel.
And let's talk about that era a little bit. So let's kind of take a flashback here to 1985 and the talk radio world. Mm-hmm. And let's take CC out of the equation in this town. And talk radio was really dormant. It was before opinion-based radio came. It was really You know, you had, I'm trying to think of the shows around.
Do you remember? I used to do odd jobs. I was painting houses and I was cleaning up attics and garages, and I was listening to Owen Spann.
That's right.
Michael Jackson.
That's right.
Bruce Williams, of course. But there were all these odd syndicated shows. But also, I was listening to Jeff Charles. This was 86. Mm-hmm. Jeff Charles, and that's when I first, of course, discovered Vogel around the same time. But you're right. Doesn't talk radio get its start really about 1980? Some guy in New York, or am I too late, picks up a phone on a music station and talks to a listener on the air and gives birth to it? There's some anecdotal story about where it all begins.
Well, there's a guy also that used to call the Don Vogel Show with these very, we'll call them eccentric, long phone calls.
I know that
was
guy.
Known as the Phantom Caller.
Yeah. That's what I was doing when I was painting houses and cleaning attics and garages. I was taking a little time out of my day to call Vogel, sit on hold for about 50 minutes just to deliver a two-minute call, hang up, and go back to...
Did you improv those, or did you have those?
Wrote them.
And that was they were amazing. There you can find them on radiotapes.com or on the internet. We may play one today too. But that was pretty wacky. I mean, that was not mainstream talk radio at that point. Usually they had the garden shows. They would have the even the shows where they do some interviews with a celebrity or a local event. But the Phantom Caller, that was very different. And Don Vogel obviously enjoyed that.
If he didn't, I would be still painting houses and cleaning attics, because it was because he laughed, solely because he laughed, that I have the career I have today. I needed at that time in my life someone to either tell me what I was doing was worthwhile, or that I was out to lunch and needing to find something else to do with my time. And Vogel's laugh, just like a comedian doing stand-up, you know, the reaction is what tells you if you're any good or not. And to this day, there may be people who will argue someone can be good and the people can still not appreciate it and they can still be good. Well, I don't know how you know that. I don't know how you know it without the other half of the equation, without the appreciation. And if you say the guy's before his time, well, then in 100 years they'll appreciate him, and the reaction will be then, and that's when we'll know he's good. But really, I don't know how you know anybody's good unless people receive it in a way that is somehow appealing.
Mm-hmm.
So I needed Vogel's laugh, and that made me call the next day, and he laughed, and that made me call the next day. And all he had to do any one of those days is say, this guy's getting annoying, and I would have never called again. I would have tail between my legs, wandered off. So he's the guy who gets all the credit for what I do these days.
How many calls did you make as the Phantom Caller?
I called four times a week.
Wow.
For 9 months, and then Vogel got a job in big-time Chicago.
That's right. Hey, I have a Phantom Caller bit here. Let's listen to some Phantom Caller from the 80s.
Nothing worked. Finally, my wife prescribed a simple home remedy. She showed me a photograph of my mother-in-law, and it scared the right out of me.
There he is again.
Where are the good ones?
Working on a new Phantom Festival event.
You know,
there were a handful, as with anything, there were some really rough ones, and there were some that were okay, and there were five good ones. Sort of like my radio show. If I had a nickel for every guy who came up to me and said, that Edmund Fitzgerald bit, man, I mean, that's great. Hey, 22 years of radio. Surely there's something else I did. But it's true. I mean, there are these few moments that stand out, and with the Phantom, what you got to go with is you got to go with one where Don can't compose himself afterward, because that's the Phantom Caller was two halves. The half I did, and then it's like Johnny calling someone over to sit on the chair. Did Vogel fall over? Did you get him where he couldn't come back and do his show? And it depended someone on the day, the mood Don was in. But there were a couple I can recall. I might have them. You know the quality of that? You know why the quality is so bad on that?
It was recorded with a recorder next to a radio.
But it would be, and then what you'd have to do to record it is you'd have to have the recorder on the whole time. If it's mine, see, that very well may be mine. These things have made it out into the world probably because I recorded them.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'd do when I recorded them on a cassette player is I'd put it in front of the radio, but I'd be on hold 50 minutes. So I'd have 50 minutes. And then I'd play the tape against another tape recorder.
Yeah, right.
And then someone else would want it, and they'd get taped to it, and it'd go on and on like that. But that quality. There was one where I called about, I'd love to find this. A cowboy's life is a very lonely life. It was a song. There he is with a cattle. There he is with a cattle. He's got a hankering for a friend, but the cow cannot be his friend. The cow cannot care. The cow is simply ugly. Well, moo, moo, move over, cowboy. The cattle is coming. It has needs like you and me. It was this weird song, and it caught Don on a day when, I don't know, if you came right after a serious call or maybe a serious topic where he needed to unload, and he collapsed on the floor, and I sat that day and said, this is why I do it. This is why the Phantom Call exists. Because Don's laugh was so great, too. He was just a 14-year-old inside.
And when Don left Chicago, what did you do then for those years?
Well, he said, call me there. And I said, I can't call you there.
Long distance.
I need to hear the show. What if he's in the middle of, you know?
I got to ask you. I mean, did you come up with the Phantom Caller, or did you give him your information?
It happened in 5 days. I called one day, and all I said, he was giving away T-shirts and bumper stickers. First Phantom Call. I remember it well. Pay phone, pulled up to the phone. I didn't think you could get on the air. I was just going to say, I didn't believe you could actually call a radio station and be on the air. So I didn't even anticipate the answer. You're on the air, go ahead. And I went, T-shirts and bumper stickers? And hung up. And I just thought, what an idiot. What did you just do that for? And I was in the car, and I hung up the phone, and I turned on the radio, and then the weird 7-second delay happened, and then I heard myself say, T-shirts and bumper stickers! And then Don Vogel started laughing, and I thought, well, that's the weirdest thing.
What? I made him laugh.
Well, the whole thing was weird. You mean to tell me? I mean, can you do it with Dan Rather at 5:30? Can you just pull up to a payphone, get on, hang on a call, people? Hi, this is Dan Rather. I'm in the middle of my job, but go ahead. T-shirts and bumper stickers! And so the idea that Don just, middle of his show, I mean, the whole thing was absurd. Why are you taking the call? Why am I on the, why are you letting the public in? The whole thing was ridiculous. But I said, okay, you want to play it this way? Fine. Next day, round about the same time, I realized now I'm going on. I tried to say something a little more clever. Third day, I did it again. Fourth day, and then fifth day, Don says, there's that. See, I never could stay on the line. I couldn't stay on the line because I was too embarrassed and I was too shy.
So they never got your information. They never found your name or anything.
No. I would go on and they'd say, Don
Vogel. There's no caller ID.
And I'd always hang up. So because I always hung up, by the fifth day, Don goes, there's that guy again. We got to come up with a name with him, a name for him, something like the Phantom Caller. And then I sat in my truck. I remember, I got a name now. I've got a name.
I'm someone.
Yes, no joke. I'm not a guy who cleans attics and garages and paints. And so then I had to call. And then it would be, if I didn't call, it'd be, hey, no call from the Phantom Caller today. I went, oh, my God. And now I'm being chastised. So I'd leave parties. I left weddings. I left dates. I would leave good buddies at bars. Where are you going? Got to do my call. Tom, aren't you a little obsessed with this? Got to do my call. Don's expecting. If I don't do my call, he says, where's the Phantom Caller? Got to do it.
It became a duty.
It was.
And, you know, anytime you do something that, again, people are appreciating your work, you feel that adrenaline, that compulsion to do it because you want to get that reaction.
Oh, I didn't get enough attention as a child, clearly. I mean, no joke. Most of us in the industry, that's the story, unfortunately. But, yeah, any kind of approval like that, Don became surrogate father to me. You know, he had 17 years in the business at this point and had worked in Chicago, Milwaukee, and the Twin Cities, and he'd been selling newspapers on the streets of Chicago as a blind kid making Phantom Calls himself.
Was Don totally blind? Was he?
Yeah.
Okay, and when he went to Chicago, like many people from Minneapolis did, and then came back to Minneapolis because they realized it's not just a cold bigger Minneapolis. It's actually a very brutal place to work. I once lived there also. Comes back to 1500, which had some breath to it, had some new blood in it.
And the second time, you
mean? Second time, right.
Yeah, I think what Don did is, didn't he go, he went to Chicago, then yep. Milwaukee, then the Twin Cities.
Right.
And I don't know, the first time around, I don't know where he was before the Twin Cities. But I know he had been in the business 17 years, and I know when he came the second time, he was miserable. And the reason he was miserable, because the first time he came, he had a weather guy, he had a news guy, John McDougal, he had a sports guy, he had an engineer and a producer, And so there'd be five guys talking on that show, and it was a free-for-all. Bruce Gordon was doing sports, and McDougal and Vogel,
Mitch
and
Berg.
David Elvine and Mitch Berg. And he comes back, and they've sliced and cut these salaries, and it's down to Don and someone fresh out of Brown.
That's right. Holly or whoever
Holly
it was.
Holly Palmer.
Yeah, right.
And I don't know how a young girl in her 20s and this seasoned old
And that was
kind
the thing, is all these
lecherous.
All these seasoned hosts had these very young, like even Suchere and Terry Ryder, they had all these very young 20-some-year-old intern-like producers.
The Hubbard approach was spend the money on the talent and the person working the board can make minimum. And as soon as they get married or have a kid, they'll move on and we'll get a new person. That was the way they operated, which worked out well for me.
You wandered your way back into talk radio.
Well, Vogel, the second time around, he needed help. And by help, he needed a sounding board. So he needed to hear how he was doing. And David Elvine and Mitch and Gordon and McDougal used to give him that sounding board. So I offered to be it because when he came back, I got together with him again and helped him find a house. He was looking for a place. He got a place in Highland in St. Paul. And we went out, had a few margaritas, and he was saying, yeah, it's all different now. They've cut everybody. I need someone to bounce stuff off of. And I remember this like it was yesterday. I'll do it, Don. And he said, word for word, that would be beneath you, sir. That would be beneath you,
and what were you,
sir.
And what were you doing at this point in your life? What was your profession?
I said, Don, I'm let's see, what was I doing? I was booking music at a music club on Grand Avenue, putting together their seven nights a week of live music and then just watching the music and drinking, as I recall. I mean, I wasn't doing anything, really. I think I had just gotten married. My wife was making most of the money. And so Don brought me on. I started at KSTP in 1992, June of 92, $4 to $6, $20 a show. Paid in cash at the end of every show. Here you go, Sonny Boy. Come back tomorrow.
And did you have to sign anything to get the $20 bill when you left the day?
And sign here and promise not to sue us. I was only worth $20. I love telling the story because it sounds like the Hubbards weren't paying much, but actually the Hubbards, which we were just talking about before we started, were actually known when I was in radio for paying very good salaries. They were actually very generous.
There are long-standing employees behind the scenes at Hubbard that worked there a long time. They oftentimes get a lot of flack for on-air talent shuffles quite a bit, but there are people that work for Hubbard Broadcasting for 50 years.
The people, television, I don't know about television. You know, in radio, you know, I can just tell you, Jason Lewis was about the unhappiest employee they had, and he shouldn't have been, but he was. He said, well, one thing you got to say about the Hubbards, they at least pay well. I mean, even he couldn't complain about that.
Well, it's good that rage went into the talk radio, because I do recall in the days of the very right-leaning conservative 1500, it was all day of right-wing talk radio.
I know.
And
what the hell was I doing there? I always tell people, they say, well, what were you doing there? Well, you got to realize, I got there when it was a bunch of left-of-center entertainers. Bob Yates, left-of-center. Terry Ryder, left-of-center. Barbara Carlson, certainly socially left-of-center, fiscally conservative. And who am I missing?
Vogel. He was...
Vogel was left-of-center. And we were all just goofy guys. We didn't even do politics. I certainly was left of center.
You had Rush was the only thing on the station that
was
conservative.
It was just Rush. Yeah. But Rush, and here's the critical point, was making all the salespeople money. I remember the first day I got there, or the second day or the second month, somewhere in there, I said to one sales guy, what's with the Rush guy? Why is he here? I mean, you got all these other entertaining, interesting, goofy people in. Who's this Limbaugh guy? And I remember the sales guy, he's still there, too. One of the few sales guys still there. He said, well, I don't know, built my swimming pool.
You know, it's a blessing and a curse.
Did you just hear my line? He built my swimming pool, he said.
That. I heard
that. You're supposed to say, oh, that's interesting. Because otherwise I think you didn't hear it. I need reaction even to this day at 51, damn it.
It's a blessing and a curse because...
He said, built my swimming pool.
Built my swimming
pool. Go ahead,
pool.
Tom, do whatever you want now.
It's a blessing and a curse because if you think about it, Rush might have saved talk radio from its demise, but then... As you said, oh, wait a second, we can sell 3 hours of radio.
It ushered in Rush Juniors coming from all directions. Little Rush, Rush Light.
I remember
local Rush.
When I think it was when Sean Hannity joined the 1500 crew, okay? I remember listening to your show, and you say, well, we have a new program here at 1500. It'll be a novel thing for us, a right-wing conservative talk show host.
Boy, I tell you, I was feeling pretty lonely. After a while, it was just, we did a live stage show with Sean Hannity.
That's right.
all the guys and it was, Sean Hannity and me. And I don't know what I was doing.
You're piano playing, and it was
I was playing piano.
That was the Chris Kroc era too. That's the best part about that particular moment of time.
There are hires in the Twin Cities I'll never understand. And then there's the hiring of one Chris Kroc. I don't know where you are, Chris, but
I don't think he's listening today. So it's by all means.
Well, he's down in Alabama, I think. But
well, good. That's probably
he was hired there in the evenings, and I remember reading a lot of big network guys wanted this fella, but we got him.
Well, he wrote that.
He wrote that. Came from Madison. I think they ran him out of Madison. That man was well. He terrified me. Chris Kroc terrified me.
Let's take a break real quick. We'll come back with TD Mishke.
There's a money making deal here, you guys.
Well, we got to make some money. All right. This is Flashback Twin Cities on KLBB Club 1220. Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond with T.D. Mishke.
What's going on with the music? What is going on? Because now, two songs in, I realize you're picking this stuff.
Are you
nostalgic for this era?
My City Was Gone was already taken by Rush Limbaugh, so I couldn't take that one. This is KG from the Saturday Night Fever soundtrack, because this is Flashback Twin Cities, and...
Could you flashback maybe a little further?
We can just play some Journey. He's thinking more like Sinatra.
If you want a flashback, Noah. Oh, that's right. We're on KLBB. I'm getting it now. Sorry.
That's right.
I forgot what the call letters
were. Wait.
We'll play the ink spots next.
I do. Well, there you go. I do have an audio bit I want to play. As a talk show host at 1500 and a journalist, which you became, esteemed journalist, politicians would fight over how to get onto your show evenings. And this is one of my favorite audio clips from your show a few years back.
Bag of Bob.
Oh, that's not it, actually. Here it is.
Jer!
Hello? Yeah. Hello?
Hi, is this Ryan?
Jerry?
No. Yeah.
Well, there's two people on. What's your name?
Well, my name's R.T. Ryback. Who's this?
Hi, I'm Mishke.
Well, hey, Mishke, where are you at?
Good, good, R.T. Good to hear from you.
Well, you know, somebody just said you mentioned me on air.
I don't think I did, actually.
That's strange. I got an email from somebody saying you'd mentioned me on air, so I gave you a call. Well, it's nice to talk to you anyways.
Yeah, it's good to talk to you. I don't think I've ever met you.
I don't think so. I've heard some things about you, but I haven't talked too much. So, well, that was strange. You having a good night?
I am. Huh? You having a good term in office?
I'm having a great time.
Well, what are your biggest successes and worst failures, RT?
Well, let me think. Biggest successes, let's see. I would say that probably the biggest successes are that a whole lot of housing units have been built and all sorts of other things. But I, frankly, haven't thought that much about it.
Oh, the hell you haven't. You constantly are asking yourself, what am I doing to serve my city? What am I doing to improve things? You must say to yourself on a weekly basis, well, at least I've done such and such, so and so. Don't tell me you don't think about it. You're in a position where you have to, because pretty soon you got to run again. You have to be able to tell people what you're doing.
No, I think about it all the time. But
so what are your big successes? Because I'll tell you, the rumor on this side of the river is in Minneapolis, because they don't have a strong mayor system, you don't get to brag about as many successes as a mayor does on the east side of the river.
Boy, he loved that, didn't he? He found himself in a situation he couldn't escape from.
Uh-oh. What do I do?
I don't know R.T. Ryback at all, but if that's how it works in politics, you sit around on a warm summer evening waiting to hear if anyone's talking about
mention
you,
my name,
and then you call them, hi, couldn't help but hear that I was the subject. No, and I hadn't even brought him up, so I don't know where that came from. It must have been another show. And I think where the call goes from here, we won't play it obviously, but I think it goes south. And I think RT is filled with regret eventually, and maybe gets a tiny bit surly, at which point I remind him he called me. You know, he calls me and then wonders why I'm actually asking him questions.
Well, for a brief moment there, I thought you were going to ask him, you know, what are you doing later tonight?
You do, actually.
What movies are you watching?
It's a pretty long clip, and you can...
people can check it out on their own, but I remember thinking at the time, and then this is what many people who listened to my show will tell you, is that spontaneous, weird, out-of-the-blue moment that could not have been planned. You don't even know how it happened. I mean, if I did a show another 50 years, that would never happen. And those moments like that, and there were several of them over the years, were the reason talk radio was so cool. It was that idea, and it goes back to what I spoke of earlier. Hi, here's a phone number. Feel free, you people out there who have no connection to this station, are not paid, are probably right now drilling holes in sheet metal, feel free to call a 50,000-watt major market station and be on the air with but a 7-second delay. Maybe we'll make some magic. Who knows? The whole thing is so strange, but you get moments like that because of it.
When you journeyed from doing a $20 a day bit with Don Vogel to your own show...
It went up quickly, by the way. I mean, I was $22.50 by October.
That's and cash only, right? So the two quarters were still in coin.
Actually,
right?
The reason I only received $20 a show is I appeared with Don. It was a tryout one day, and it was a Saturday. And afterward, he called Ginny and said, "What do you think?" And she says, "I don't get it." And Don called and said, "Well, Ginny doesn't really get it." I said, "You know, Don, I was really nervous and really uncomfortable, and I didn't know what we were doing. You didn't give me any tips or how we do this or anything. I was quiet most of the time. But I think I get it now. Can we do one more?" So we did one on that Monday. And afterward, Don said, "Best show I've ever done." You know why it was the best show he ever did? Because I was a human laugh track for him. All I did that Monday was laugh at what he said. And he called it the best show he'd done since he got there. Now, he got there in March, and this is June, so that's not saying that much. But still, I got to have him. Got to have Mischke. Well, Ginny said, "Okay, I'll give him 20 bucks. You know, I'll reach into my purse.
See what I got on
him. Get some gum, and I got 20 bucks."
But he just wanted that so badly, that live human being, and he got it.
And you went on to your own show, and when you went on to your own show originally, you did the mornings at 1500 for a while with Pat Mylan.
Mylan and Mischke, what a bizarre...
Well, I was going to ask you about that. That was a pretty bizarre combination. God. That's worse than Cannon and Kozlak.
Well, it wasn't that bad. I mean, I didn't pass notes to Pat Mylan that had all sorts of weird innuendo in it. And by the way, that story, which is legendary with... Steve and Ruth. Didn't Ruth used to be here?
She did.
Okay, I feel perfectly comfortable saying this. Steve, God rest your soul, I'm telling the story. Steve's relationship with Ruth Kozlak was all about sexual innuendo. And she was bawdy, Steve was bawdy, all sorts of stuff off the air. So Steve, having a little fun behind the scenes one night, or one day on the air, makes the mistake of doing it at a time when we now have this new climate of sexual harassment. And Ruth made the play at that point. But years and years of those guys goofing around behind the scenes talking to each other that way without any lawsuits, and all of a sudden, boom. But I remember they called Steve into the office and they said, "Steve, did you do so-and-so?" And he said, "Yeah, what of it? Yeah, anything else? Hey, how are ratings?" "Well, Steve, things have changed. We can't do that anymore."
"You can't smoke in the
studio." "And you'll be reading about yourself and CJ quite a bit from now on."
"You can't smoke in the studio anymore either."
Yeah, and many other things. Steve, the story... Oh, God, if we could do a show on Steve's stories, of course, we never can air them because the climate has changed.
Perhaps on the podcast we can do that. No, and by the way, just to the listeners, the thousands of listeners here at Flashback Twin Cities, Steve Cannon, they thought it'd be a great idea to pair him with Ruth Kozlak in afternoons 20 years ago, 20 years ago. Didn't work out too well. It worked about as well as Chris Kroc on radio.
You know, prior to the two of them working together... they had a great relationship, but it was just a mistake to put them together. But I'll tell you, to Steve's credit, you know, he was sued by Ruth, and before his death, he didn't have anything bad to say about her. He said, "Great talent, Ruthie. Ruthie was a great talent." I thought, boy, what a magnanimous fella.
But then Mischke and Milan, that so
Mischke and Milan.
We had the Channel 5 reporter and the Don Vogel sidekick together for...
We were talking about money in the Hubbards earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Limousine to work every day. Stretch.
Milan.
Me.
Oh, you.
You course. Know why? Because Milan had one. This is what happened. I believe I have a record. I have the Guinness World Book of Records for having the lowest salary in America and getting a limousine ride to work every day. I defy anyone to find anyone. I'll tell you exactly what I was making. By this point, I was making $26,000 a year, and I got a stretch limo every day, pulled up in front of my house 3:30 in the morning with coffee and the newspapers, television on. I was driving a 62 Ford. One day, we finished the show, Pat and I. I've been working with him a week, and I see him go out the door, and I'm fortunately look out the window, and I see him get into a stretch limousine. I said, what? What? You know, it's winter. I'm getting into my cold 62 Ford. And I go running out there. Stop! Stop! Where'd you get this? He says, well, I negotiated it with the Hubbards. I said, you know, I got to come from Edina. You know, that's a lot of driving. I don't want to be doing that. I should be doing prep at that time. I'm going to be sitting in my car. I don't want to. You negotiated a stretch limousine for talk radio, AM. Listen, what route do you take? So take 94. Okay, you go by Dale Street? I'm living on Grand and Dale, buddy. You get that limousine driver to exit on Dale. You come down to Grand and Dale. I'll be waiting for you every day. I'm not driving a 62 Ford and working with a guy in a stretch limo. And so for the rest of the time, I got picked up by that stretch limo.
Until the show...
Until Pat was let go. I mean, they didn't... They went from, we'll give you a limo, please work here, to 3 months later saying, ah, it ain't working out. And who came in the door?
The mayor of Brooklyn Park decided to...
Jesse. Give,
and so we can thank 1500 for propelling that figure to state politics.
And you know what Jesse said to me one time? I was sitting in the governor's mansion with him. His life was going well. And I said, lowest point in your career, worst day of your life. What is it? What was it? Jesse said, that's easy. The worst day of my entire professional life in anything was the day I was fired from KSTP. I couldn't believe it. I thought, really? Either that guy didn't have many failures, or he really wanted to work at KSTP. I don't know.
And do you talk to Jesse anymore? I mean, have you guys...
I used to talk to him a lot. But about the time he became an expat, I remember I talked to him when he was leaving for Mexico. Mm-hmm. I'm out of here, Tommy. I'm done with
it. You know,
he's
out of here, but he's always here. That's what I don't understand.
Well, his wife makes him come back in the nice weather because her family's here. And Terry, God love her, one of the great Minnesotans, just a wonderful woman. She said, you know, we're not going to stay in Mexico the whole time and hide. I have friends, family. We're coming back to Minnesota every summer and you can golf.
I still don't know how you go to Mexico for freedom, but that's, you know, what do I know?
Jesse has, and he's said this many times to me, he's very thin skin, and I don't know why he was in the business he was, but he was hurt often by little things, and he got an edge to him that unfortunately exists to this day.
Is it an act or is it real?
No, it's not an act. One thing about Jesse is he's genuine. In fact, he's one of the most genuine human beings I've ever known. He's, you know what Leon Panetta said about him? The man is without guile.
Mm-hmm.
That's an exact quote after spending time with him. And a lot of people laugh. Nope, that's dead on right. There's got an innocence to him a lot of people don't know about. But he got hurt so easily. So many of these guys in that world, in the world of entertainment and politics, public life, have thin skins. And
Well, they want you to love them. At the moment people don't love you anymore, you feel like you're a failure.
Well, one thing... You know, and just from doing this show on a couple of things, and Tom knows this, we've had some guests that had some, you know, asked some questions that they didn't appreciate. But
for instance, what's the most memorable? Please.
Oh, you know, we've
the
had
most memorable.
Most memorable. I'm trying to think
the one that angered somebody the most when you asked the question.
All right, we have to think about that.
Barbara Carlson and the diaper.
No, she did. She just didn't want to answer the questions we asked her. She wanted to talk about the Pope and right. That, but.
That one was pretty memorable.
For a group of people, and you were at Newsapalooza, for a group of people that made a living off of asking people uncomfortable questions or getting to, you know, people's, you know, they don't necessarily want to hear that back to themselves.
Right. Yeah, it's very strange. Sometimes I think when someone says they've developed a thick skin. Sometimes I think when someone says they've developed a thick skin, that also is sort of heartbreaking because it's, what they're saying is that they've become a little bit less human.
Mm-hmm.
So,
So let's talk about your show. So you did, you went from the morning show, which you didn't get, was your limo gone? Once Pat was gone, no more limo for you then, right?
Back to the 62 Ford, which was a great car anyway.
And if I remember correctly, they had the money talk show from 8 to 10 o'clock, and they thought, well, why don't we just give it to Mischke?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Barbara Carlson was instrumental in that. After Milan and Mischke, I went home, and I was going to be done. And Ginny called and said, well, what about doing the Tom Wyant show? Tom Wyant was an attorney in the evening who had a show. And I said, well, Tom's got it. And she said, well, you know, Tom's a lawyer. He's got a good career. He's just kind of doing this as a lark. Why don't you take it? And I said, well, I'm not going to bounce a guy out of a seat, you know, out of a radio career so that I can go. And no way. So I was done. I was gone. It was about 2 weeks later, Barbara Carlson called me at home. She said, what are you, nuts? What are you, crazy? This is how radio works. The day you don't want to take someone else's job, you shouldn't even be in this business. That's how you get jobs. You take other people's jobs. How does a football team work? Come on. You're better than someone else, and you take their job. You steal it, and you laugh all the way to the bank. She told me this.
Ouch.
She said, so if you want to be in this business, you know, you better toughen up, Charlie Brown. And so I took it. I took Tom Wyant's job. And the only thing that made me feel okay about it was he did have a good job. He was an attorney. And those were the days when, you know how Tom Wyant got his job at KSTP?
He gave them money to do a show?
Nope. Won it in a contest. See, what you can't, you know, the $20 a show, winning shows in a contest, this 50,000-watt major market radio. I mean, it was so goofy. Won it in a contest.
I believe one of Joe O'Brien's contests was before he was gone was if you be the host. Weren't they trying out hosts for like 3 months on Sunday afternoons? I do recall this. Like, host your own show. And all forms from the Twin Cities brought in these two-hour shows. I remember on Sunday afternoons listening to who would be the next big thing or whatever it was. I don't think they chose someone from that lineup of auditionees.
I will say that radio was in the process of heading at KSTP to where you better work full time at it. You better not have a second job. I still remember the days when Rookie was plowing driveways and stuff while doing Joe's show, working at Dayton's while doing Joe's show. But eventually we all grew up, and it was, no, you work full-time on this, and if you spend half the day golfing, you'll be out of a job soon enough because it takes a lot of work.
Well, there was a period. I mean, that was kind of the golden age of talk radio, the late 90s and the early 2000s. That was the golden age when
really was the golden age. I mean, Joe talks about it now, Souchere, because he was riding high, about as high as you can ride if you're not Steve Cannon or Tom Bernard. And he talks about it now because it's been a long decline since then.
Him and Lewis and you, and I still say again, how you fit into that lineup is amazing and sustained for, you know, that many years. You were there before they all got there, and then they all went to a different station across town, and you remained.
I survived the Twins. The Twins got there. I thought, well, I'm done now. They just got the Twins. I work at night. The Twins are at night. But they moved me earlier, and a lot of people flipped out at that, went nuts. Mischke's got to be at night. You know why I had to be at night? Because that's where everybody heard me was at night. I mean, isn't it funny where you are on the time? Jay Leno moves 1 hour. No way. That's it. We're not listening. You know, I mean, 1 hour, is it? That's not the time for you. This is the time. You know, do you ever get a book and go, no, not at 2. I never read this at 2. I read this at 6. It's just very odd.
You know, because people like what they're used to. I think that's how people survive. You know what? Jay Leno, we discussed Jay Leno, and we have differing Jay Leno opinions of our social group here. But I'm used to Jay Leno. I'm used to being, if I'm going to bed, there's Jay Leno. It's a strange, comforting feeling to know he's always going to be there telling some very soft humor.
Is going to be very hard for you.
It's going to be tough.
Is going to be a drag.
I don't hear Jay Leno at 5 o'clock. It's not the time. That's time for Paul Majors and Don Shelby, not for Leno.
Well, I got it. I eventually figured it out, and I said, okay. When CCO came knocking, I said, yeah, late night. That's the only place for me. If I'm going to be in radio, and that's why I'm not in radio today, if I'm going to be in radio, it's going to have to be late night. And if I don't want to be late night, I cannot be in radio.
Well, let's take a quick break here. We'll be back with T.D. Mischke on Flashback Twin Cities on KLDB.
Oh, you groove into this music.
That one there's grooving. I'm
all a happy man.
He's happy.
I can't say anything other than that.
You know, we're talking about what we're used to, and this clip here I want to play. This is when people are used to the certain people they're used to at certain times of day, and let's listen to this.
Hi, this is Jason Lewis Show.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, great. I just want to make a comment.
Okay, your first name?
Jim.
Okay, hang on, Jim.
Sure.
Jim, you're on with Jason. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, or good afternoon.
Hi.
Hey, Jason, it is great to have you back. I just wanted to say it's almost like some of the politicians on the left are okay with being attacked every once in a while and just kind of maybe making some great speeches about it and then just letting it go and hoping it doesn't happen again.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And I'm wondering if the Republicans are going to use that as a good argument, because it seems to me they do just want to pull out of Iraq. And I really think in the grand scheme of things that maybe the Bush administration knew that Iraq would become sort of a battlefield for terrorists a long time ago, but couldn't tell the American people because we wouldn't go for it if we knew that.
Do you have a Raggedy Ann doll?
No, I don't.
I like to play with them.
All right.
American history by...
Whoopsie-daisy. That was the old number to get a hold of Jason.
If you can't get the reaction from the people, you can always just laugh at yourself later.
I wish people could have seen you were dying in there.
Oh, I had forgotten about that.
He was calling 646-8255, and he got you.
I was saying while I was listening, I think I throw this guy a curveball, but I can't remember which one I threw.
It's a great Jason Lewis impression.
I don't think he saw that coming. I think of all the things he thought I'd say, that was way down there.
You know, true to what you said, you give someone an outlet, a 50,000, you know, watt radio station, and point about the Iraq War. It was very well thought of. Very, very, you know, it's deep. And
you know, when I think about it now, during those years, I think the Hubbards were all in bed. I don't know what I. The things I did and what went on there at the station and just whatever I could think of that had just never been done before, anything I could think of, just however far out there I could get, I longed to even get a little farther if I could. And then eventually culminating in a night where I said, let's just not say anything for 2 hours. So for 2 hours I didn't say anything. And all that came of that night was... Mr. Hubbard was driving around. You could tell I worked for the company. I'm still calling him Mr. Hubbard. He was driving around, and he was listening. I think he called Ginny, and he said, yeah, what's with Mishki? I think Ginny tuned in and go, you know, that's Tommy.
I have some more audio I want to play, but I want to make sure we'll plug your event at O'Gara's on May
8th.
May 8th. O'Gara's, what time?
7 to 10 o'clock at O'Gara's. It's a $10 cover, and it is a show to kick off the new venture, which is my new program with the Tom Bernard Network.
And we can view that or we can listen to that program on TomBernardShow.com, correct?
Where you'll find it come the 12th of May, MishkiRoadshow.com. The program is called The Mishki Roadshow because I am doing it from the road.
Ooh.
Not from a studio, not from this lovely little world you're in right now. Not only going to be thinking outside the box, I'm outside the box!
You're going to be the cardboard box, right?
Hmm?
The cardboard box?
I'm going to be, yeah, the refrigerator box. I think Vogel used to say I lived in a refrigerator box. Or was it a dumpster? I don't know. A lot of people believed that, though.
MishkiRoadshow.com.
MishkiRoadshow.com. It's not up yet. We're going down to the wire. May 12th, it all starts, and May 8th at O'Gara's. Music and shenanigans up on stage if you want to show up.
Okay, I got some more audio here. This is another one of my favorite audio bites of let's play here.
Peter.
Hello.
Yeah.
Tom?
You betcha, Pete.
Hi. You may remember me from Rosie's. But nonetheless, here we go.
Rosie's Coffee Shop?
Yeah, you betcha, right across the street.
You used to hang out there?
Oh yeah.
You weren't the guy who used to talk about going up into the Ramsey Hill area on weekends looking for women of the night.
No.
Oh, okay. There was a guy there.
Of course, all you had to do was go across the street to the red carpet. You'd be right there.
No, Rosie's was the red carpet.
I know. That's what I'm talking about.
Well, how can you go there when you're in Rosie's?
Well.
I mean, the guy who
Okay, time. Oh. No, excuse me. Time, space, continuum, brain fart.
All right.
nonetheless, here we go. We're talking about the person was saying that she doesn't, sunlight bothers her and cheeriness bothers her and all that sort of stuff. I studied when I was at Central, oddly enough, during Ron Rosenbaum's tenure at Central.
Ron Rosenbaum taught there?
Yeah, well, he didn't teach there. He was some sort of an administrator.
Huh.
He beats everybody over the head with how fabulous an administrator he was. But nonetheless...
Well, we don't have to use my show to... Hey, we don't have to
Central.
Use my show to beat up on Ron Rosenbaum. You use Ron's show to do that. That's only fair.
Oh, and, I wouldn't do that because he'd cut me off. Because every time he'd give him a little bit of crap, he and his little sycophant O'Connell cut you off.
Let's have a little... Hold it. Before we go into your point, let's have some time out here and maybe talk about... have you had a traumatic experience with their program?
I've been given short shrift too many times.
Is it possible?
It's hard to make a salient point when these guys are jacking off all over themselves.
Well, no, I don't want to have that kind of talk on my program.
Well, okay, sorry. We digress, though.
Well, I feel like calling up Ron right now and having you talk to him because I really have problems with this whole
thing. I think he cut you off.
No, I'm going to call up Ron. I'm going to ask you to I'm going to get to your point, but I ask you to go on hold right now because this happens in talk radio. I'm uncomfortable with it. One person's show is used as a forum to attack another person's show. There's a fair way to do this, and we're going to do it fair. I want you to call Ron Rosenbaum right now. High speed. We'll get him on the line. Now I have Ron Rosenbaum, but... Peter ran away like a little scared rabbit. Hi, Ron.
Tommy, how you doing?
I'm all right, but I'm thwarted now in my attempt to bring some peace here to the life of a gentleman.
I didn't realize there was the kind of language on that bit.
Tom, what are you doing to
Has
me?
Has that ever been said on KLBB?
I can guarantee no.
A lot of these older people, though, are getting more and more sophisticated, having seen movies and such, you know. I think it was the French wave and the film industry that really ushered in a whole new way of viewing movies.
Well, the best part is you called Ron Rosenbaum at night to make sure that he could talk to another caller, and this is the days when people actually would answer their phones at home, and you guys go through a 10-minute debate between the caller and Ron and you. And...
Things changed between that night and when I got fired. You know what I got fired for? I picked up the phone on my show, and I called the front desk of our own station, and the woman answered, and you can't do that. You can't call people out first telling them they're going to be on the air. Of course, I did that for 10 years, night after night after night. I used to call all over the country. One time I went to the phone book and said, I'm calling every Knievel in America until I find evil. I think I called 42 Knievels.
And the 411 operator was one of the best.
They loved to talk to them. They were lonely people. They wanted the company.
One time you were trying to, I think it was the, you discovered the biggest drinkers. I think it was Connecticut had the biggest drinkers per capita. So you called Barbara Carlson and Jason Lewis in Connecticut to ask their opinions of drinking.
Why does he keep putting up his hand? Why are you doing that, Tom?
We got 2 minutes.
Oh. Only 2 minutes left?
This has been a fast hour.
What, did we burn an hour? So Barbara talked about her diaper. Let me tell you about mine.
No, that's,
what brand did she use?
Yeah, we've already gone down that road on the show.
To answer your question, depends. That's the brand.
Right, yeah. So Mischke Roadshow, and then, any guess on May 8th? Is Don Shelby going to be up there, or is he going
to
be...
Shelby and Bernard are both saying they're coming down to O'Gara's. That'll be amazing. You know, those two guys have been friends for over 30 years. I would love to find out how that ever happened. I just can't imagine the two of them being lifelong buddies, Don Shelby and Tom Bernard. But they say they're coming down there, and so are some of the other folks in this Tom Bernard Network. Tom Bernard Network is Tom Bernard, Rusty Gatenby, Kalen Rosenberg, Carl Franklin, me, and it's growing. Louis Anderson is talking about joining it. We'll see.
Worldwide audience, the digital.
Yeah,
do you listen to podcasts? Do you?
Yeah, I listen to a few of them. And what I love about it is just the freedom. You know me, I got to have freedom, and this is complete freedom. No more rules, no more FCC violations.
You and Howard Stern, right?
Well, don't put me in that guy's company.
Well, hey, thanks for coming on Flash of Twin Cities. Let's do it again sometime. We'll do a whole show on Steve Cannon next time.
That would be fun.
This is Flash of Twin Cities, KLDD Club 1220. We will be back next week at 2 o'clock, our new time.